And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your source for Starfinder's news, reviews, and interviews. I'm Alexander Agunis, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James.
I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
You know, it's funny. Dragon Elvish says, hello, it feels a long time since I did. Oh, that's Elvish specifically. I thought he was going to say since us, because I was going to make the joke that, like, it's actually been the shortest time between episodes that we've done in, like, a year. Easy.
Maybe.
Well, think about it, because, like, we had an episode at the start of March because I had my root canal at the end of February. Like, we've actually, like, it's the shortest amount of time, which is funny because we did our show in March, and then Paizo, as they often do, went on to their stream and were like, hey, we're going to sit down with Thurston Hillman and Jenny Jarbowski. And God, I'm so sorry, Jenny. I just murdered your name. Exactly. They sat down and they're like, hey, here's all the Starfinder lore. And we're like, no, why would you do this to us? But we're here now. So we have a potpourri episode today. James, explain to us what a potpourri means.
The way you said that word is very weird. Potpourri.
Oh, did I say it wrong? It's potpourri. I thought potpourri was the stuff you put in your closet to make it smell nice.
Yes, that is. Do you not know the origin of potpourri as a
as a
synonym for like random or miscellaneous?
James, I went to school for behavior and education. I didn't go to school for cooking. You explain. Go, please.
Potpourri also isn't food. If you eat potpourri, it will make you sick. It's just stuff that smells good. And the joke and using it as a non sequitur, like for nonsense, is from a Saturday Night Live. Because when Alex Trebek did when Will Ferrell did the Jeopardy episodes, that was always the random category was potpourri.
Wait, so I'm confused. Oh, yeah. Wait. No, but I Googled that and I saw it potpourri, and that's like a mix of dried naturally. Oh no, actually you're right. Oh wow, I should have read.
There's so many layers up here that you just did not come together.
So literally like James said that, and I wanted to make sure I knew what he was talking about. And I thought he meant like a food because James is a food guy. And I Googled potpourri and it shows like this pretty bowl with all like the herbs and dried fruits and stuff. And I saw that and wow, that's tasty. This must mean like a type of soup or something. You put everything in like when you're going to when you're getting hot pot. And so I was like, okay, cool. And so I went and I had a bowl. Wow.
I mean, it still fits because it's just like everything kind of together. But yeah, the use of it as just a term synonymous for just like whatever else is in there, whatever's left is just from Jeopardy. Wow. Just from a Saturday Night Live Jeopardy.
This is your guy who writes adventures for you, you know, and and rules contents. I know what words mean.
No, you don't. Writers don't know words. They know the sources.
I mean, that's very true. You've seen me play tabletop role-playing games and you're like, I just don't remember things. It's like, wow. And like we play first edition Pathfinder and my joke is always like, yeah, I've forgotten more things than the average gamer ever knew. I don't know what that does, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, when I used to play World of Warcraft, there was a trash item that was like Telebris goo. Uh-huh. And I had to look up that word. And that's when I realized that people are making it up.
you
get a thesaurus to get a word count to get something different. You know, that is what it is.
Listen, sometimes you just take a bunch of things that sound like this word is Greek for shadows, and I understand how words are put together, so I'll put together a fake word. Because let me tell you something, readers and listeners, also readers, if you're reading this for some reason, like good luck, but the secret is that all words are made up.
That is true.
It's true. We just, some of us agree that some words are canon. It's like being in a fandom, a literary fandom. Speaking about being in a fandom, we have a whole bunch of random little things to talk about today. James, you want to name some of the things we're talking about today?
There was that Starfinder live stream that went over a couple little hints of what's coming out in the next couple books.
Yeah.
Next book specifically, and a little bit extra.
The next book.
Some ancestries. And then... what else did we have?
I mean, you had story time. We were going to have story time with James.
I don't know if it's huge story time, but just a little bit of story time because I got to run the Starfinder Shards of the Glass Planet Starfinder Society playtest adventure for not Society credit, I offered the players that. They didn't want it.
Oh my God. They turned down free society credit. They don't understand. You remember back in the day we would go through hoops for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different time. Also, I grabbed a group of people because I am still up in the air about second edition rules, because sure. I'm not big on Pathfinder second edition rules. And I think maybe my perception of it is skewed by the group that I generally play with. So I gathered a group of random people that either don't play TTRPGs, have no Starfinder experience, or just people atypical that from my normal gaming group, just to run it through with them to see how they like it. And maybe that will change my perspective a little bit.
I am excited to hear what you think, because in our typical group, I definitely have a different opinion than most of the people, but not super different, but definitely different. So I'm excited. Maybe we'll wrap up with talking about opinions and things, which is why my tagline for this show is news, reviews, and personal views. Oh, I bet Ryan Costello is really going to love that when he sees it. It's really good. I'm proud of it.
I'll tell you, after last month's show, not getting a text from him with the 2FA, it felt good getting that again. Because if you missed it, the last episode, we didn't have access to Mr. Costello because he was on vacation, and we weren't going to bother him. So we ended up streaming that to YouTube, which is easier for me, but you know.
Yeah. So if you're looking for if you're looking for episode 94, you can either go watch it on YouTube, or you could go to NoDirectionPodcast.com, our like super headquartersy place where you can find that episode and a link to it on our stream, and you can just listen to it. But if you want to actually see our faces, you have to go to YouTube.
Yeah. Also, YouTube lets you do it in x2 and now x3 speed on mobile, which I love for most things.
James just wants to get through the content faster, more content, feed it.
Yeah. Yes. Do you not listen to stuff on x2?
Oh no, I do sometimes. It's especially like if I'm watching, like I play Magic the Gathering. So if I'm watching like a review of a new pre-con deck and I don't really care about half of the stuff they're saying, I just want to get to the spoilers and the reprint value, and I'll listen at x2 and then just watch as the cards pop up on the screen. I'm like, huh, small talking man in funny box makes silly sounds win fast.
Yeah, exactly. Like it just lets you get through stuff. Cause there's a lot of content that is produced every day. So That's a total side tangent.
Lava Being in Chat says there was a live stream. We record all of our episodes live on Wednesdays, the final Wednesday of the month. Every episode is live. Live.
I think regarding the Starfinder.
Oh yeah. We did play those live. Those were fun.
Well, no, because they did it as a blog post as well. A lot of the news that they did in that live stream.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know. They did a live stream. They have Paizo Fridays. I imagine that they promote them, but I never really see the promotions when they go out. Most of the times when I hear about it, it's because like I'm in a bunch of freelancer discords, or like I chat with Dustin and you know he'll be like, oh yeah, we're doing this thing, all these announcements, or he likes to send me art from the streams. He gets very excited about the art that they show.
Yeah, there was some new art, which is good.
Yeah, new art is always great. That's how you get people pumped. You got to give things people can see. You sell what you hold.
Yeah, like the blog post has like a new Patra art and a new contemplative art.
Yeah.
And they were instantly recognizable, which is good because I didn't realize they had tags under them, and it took me a second.
Yeah. Well, should we start with the stream then? It sounds like that's where our interest has meandered.
Yeah, I mean, that was the most news.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they were given like 16 extra ancestry options. I don't think any of them are new to the system. They were just kind of promotions of the previous ones that had previously existed. No Ijitkri as so far, which, you know,
someday
sours my heart, but one day. And if Dromedarians, the Campbell people, if they're in there before Squidbillies, I will riot.
I feel like the camel people are like, they're in a book. Yeah. But I think that at most they were in one Starfinder Society adventure. Whereas the Ijitkris are like one of the primary races of the Vescarium. I would be shocked if the camel people got their book first. I know you hate them.
Yeah. That word is also weird because dromedary is a type of a camel, dromedary, and maybe the genus, but when you shorten it, my brain don't work. It short circuits.
That's true.
Sounds like I have a stutter that I don't have.
Yeah. So, first thing that we have learned is that there's going to be an adventure coming out relatively soon called Guilt of the Grave World. It is an all-in-one book adventure starting at first level, focused on discovering the dark secrets of Eox, the Grave World. It is a lot about Zoe. James, now, have you done a lot of Starfinder Society's adventures with Zoe?
I did the first couple. I haven't done Society since season 3, I think.
Yeah. Around COVID is when I stopped as well. Now, let me ask you, if you had to describe Zoe in 3 words or less, how would you describe the undead media mogul?
Bob Barker, but mean.
That's good. That's really good. So he's a very, I think it's fair to say he's a pretty popular character in the Starfinder universe. Would you agree? Not like, but like among the fans.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So he is a relatively popular character among longtime Starfinder players. And he basically is this undead who lives on the undead world of Eox and has stuff everywhere. Lots of interesting tie-ins in Starfinder Society with him, because Starfinder Society does a lot with, like, you know, mass media and like publications. And one of the things I'll say about Starfinder Society is, like, there's a lot of really good adventure paths for Starfinder, but I feel like Starfinder Society is what ended up driving a lot of like Pack World's lore development forward, kind of like what happened with Pathfinder in first edition and honestly in second edition. So you have this character who's featured in a ton of scenarios, such as the, I have never played this one, but I absolutely adore its name. It's called Zoe versus Zoe. So what happens is that there was Zoe is obviously it's Z-O exclamation point is his name, and he is like this major pop culture character, and Triaxis has a city called Zoe on it, and so Zoe tries to sue the city of Zoe for rights to his name. I do not know how that adventure ends. I only know of that plot hook, but this is what you're dealing with when you deal with Zoe. And so this adventure goes into a lot of like Zoe's background, which is interesting because it's called Guilt of the Grave World. So it makes you wonder, does Zoe have anything to be guilty about? We do know that rumor has it, according to Thurston and Jenny, that the current rumor is that Zoe predates the gap, and he has been on air since television came to Eox, and he's particularly into games and death matches. If you are into the second edition playtest, Wheel of Monsters is one of the playtest scenarios, which is basically a game to test how combat works, and the players are contestants on one of Zoe's shows called Wheel of Monsters, where they spin the wheel and that's what you fight. So long history for this.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a society scenario, I think, two where you're in his game shows.
Yeah, definitely. I think in one of them, like, doesn't the society end up owing him a favor and that's what he requests?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we also know that he starts off as someone the characters don't really know other by their reputation. Like, they obviously know who Zoe is. He's like, it's like someone asking you who Taylor Swift is, you know, like the basic stuff. But he becomes something of a mentor figure to the players, which is also interesting. Apparently, there is a connection to the Starfinder playtest, specifically to the Wheel of Monsters adventure. And yeah, apparently it's very... rustic is what we were told. It's like synthwave rustic rock in the vibes of the adventure, which is an interesting thing to say. It's definitely hard to give like a musical impression in the writing and in the adventures. So I'm interested to see what this looks like for this adventure.
Yeah. Is this the one that's all in first? No, this isn't the one that's all first level, right?
No, this one is 1-5. The one that's all first level is Murder in Metal City. That's the one Lava Being in chat is talking about, which is like a boxed adventure. That's like a special thing, mm-hmm. but it's only first level.
Okay. Oh, I mean, it should be interesting. I mean, I think the society, the reason why society is such a strong pusher for your lore is the people that write you. There's a lot of people that are freelancers in the community that tend to write for society scenario adventures. So they tend to be more fans. Mm-hmm. So it's just a more feedback loop of people more familiar with that product.
Yeah.
Because not everybody is familiar with every product their company works on. Like, that's just, it's unreasonable to expect anybody to be when you produce so many things.
Yeah. And I also think that, like, adventure paths tend to focus on one big event that's going on, right? Yeah. And, you know, this wasn't, this is partially true in first edition and second edition, but it's super true in Starfinder, where like a lot of the adventure paths are kind of like closed off from the setting. Like you'll be focusing on this one specific thing that you're doing, and it might not even be in the pack worlds, like how Attack of the Swarm takes place in one specific star system that we've never heard of before this adventure, or how Signal of Screams involves yourself with like one specific corporation that you are investigating. And a lot of these adventures, like, they're probably things that'll end up on the news, but they might not necessarily make you like a interplanetary hero, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
Dead Sons there are exception there.
Well, the thing with Dead Sons is that I don't remember, did Dead Sons end with you getting like your Star Wars medal awarding ceremony? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, the Dead Sons is definitely an exception to that. I imagine Devastation arc is too, because isn't the story behind that one that like a massive alien spaceship comes to blow up Absalom?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like there are definitely stories out there that like push the setting narrative forward, but a lot of the adventure paths are smaller stories. Yep. Like I don't know how, obviously we never got to the end of Against the Aeon Throne. Stellar ended after the first book, but like I kind of wouldn't be surprised if that one kind of ends as just you're a bunch of plucky heroes against the evil empire and that's it.
Yeah, no spoilers, but I think it just ends with you making sure that those places aren't under their control, because they still exist. Yeah. There's no changes really on that front afterwards, which is once again totally fine. Sometimes I think for adventure paths it's important to not go too hard on story changes, because these are going to be a lot of people's first introduction, because home games still are that important for that reason.
Yeah. What's interesting though is you can kind of look at Drift Crisis as sort of like an exception to this rule, where Drift Crisis kind of was Paizo's experiment with the modern Pathfinder 2e event book, right? Mm-hmm. You know, everyone likes to go, wow, Paizo was so innovative in Pathfinder when they came out with War of the Immortals, and that details the God's Reign, where Gorum gets killed and his blood rains down on worlds that he touched, giving mythic power to things, or the elemental book whose name I don't remember, Rage of the Elements, where this book is all about like suddenly the elemental plane of metal and wood manifests after being locked away for a long time, and this is all that's happening here. And like those event books are cool, but it also wasn't the first time it happened. That was Drift Crisis, where that entire book is about a setting event in Pathfinder, which is suddenly the drift doesn't work, and what does that mean and what does that do, and that event gets resolved in an adventure path.
An
adventure path. You know, you can't see me if you're listening, but I'm like gesturing to me because I wrote the adventure that ends the Drift Crisis. But you know, it's kind of like, it's cool, it's like a thing that Paizo has done, and Starfinder was at the forefront of it. So I would expect going into second edition that they're probably going to carry this idea of doing big like bombastic setting event books going forward. What do you think, James?
I mean, I would like that. I mean, I'm up for anything that they kind of throw on the table. I don't mind the smaller stuff. I just want to see it get made.
Yeah. I mean, and talking about things getting made, I feel like nothing is really off the table anymore, especially if, you know, the Starfinder team is going to take cues from the Pathfinder team. You know, I'm interested to see if they develop something like Pathfinder's Lost Omens line. The Lost Omens line is kind of like player companions and campaign setting guides from first edition fused into one hardcover book. Mm-hmm. Where like it's got new rules content around this theme, but it's also a big setting guide for things that are going on. Mm-hmm. And you know, one thing that has me interested is that we know going into second edition one of the big events is that one of the playtest adventures is about hostilities erupting between the Vescarium and the Aslanti Star Empire, right? Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that Pathfinder second edition's new book coming out this fall is or it might even be like in April, I don't remember whether it's the Gen Con book or the spring book, but the book that's coming out is called Battle Cry, and it basically details about how Gorum's death in War of the Immortals causes like unchecked aggression and war to break out over Galarian. And so I think like there's a major like war coming. And from the front cover, there's a lot of Eagle Knights on the front cover of that book. It makes me think that, and if they haven't announced it, I'm not sure, but my guess is that if you're going to have Andoran go to war with someone, it's probably Cheliax, right?
Probably, but who knows?
I mean,
once again, I don't play Pathfinder Second Edition, so I'm not up to date with the setting. I don't think that setting's strength is mass combat in that way.
Mm.
But you know, you should still try things. So hopefully, yeah, it definitely comes through and people like it.
Yeah, definitely. There's also a bit of notes about the Zoe adventure. They mentioned that it's not going to be all undead all the time. It's a major theme, but you're going to meet other factions and things. And they said that regardless of what character you're like, what faction your character is from, you start working for this this kind of like dwarven mining conglomerate on Eox, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, it is weird that they're just there, just chilling on the planet of the undead.
They're just chilling. Apparently, they want you. The adventure starts with them wanting the players to investigate something odd they found in the diaspora after the birth of the newborn.
Hmm.
Which is the whole events of the Cosmic Birthday playtest adventure.
Oh,
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how it develops.
Definitely. Apparently, one of the factions is the Corpse Fleet. They're back!
Yay!
Hooray!
You guys will see Betty again.
Oh my gosh, it's Betty. Oh god. When James ran Dead Sons for our home group, Betty was like a undead Librian. Did we press gang that man into our crew? I think we did.
You kidnapped that man after he failed to board your ship. Yes.
He tried to board our ship and we beat him up. That's right. He showed up in one of those little Eoxian coffin ships.
Mm-hmm.
So good. And then I don't even remember why he stuck around. Wasn't it because Robin threatened to kill him?
Yeah.
It sounds like Robin.
And he couldn't go back because he would just be killed for not completing his job.
He told us his name, and Robin goes, "Betty is better."
When you don't want to die, your name's Betty.
Oh my gosh, I love that game. That game is so fun. If you've never played Dead Sons, I definitely recommend it. It's definitely a funny game.
Yeah, it can be. That is not as it is written.
No. But the stuff that's not written is the stuff that the players remember, because exactly. That's the stuff they contributed.
Exactly.
You know, definitely. And then there was a whole bunch of monsters they previewed. One of them was called the Bone Flayer. It was like a mechanoid creature made out of white bones, similar to a small dragon.
Hmm.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Someone in chat asked us earlier, I believe it was Lava Being, they asked us if there was like any versatile heritage announcements. We have been told that this book that's coming out, The Undead Adventure, Guilt of the Grave World, apparently it has a big toolbox for playing undead characters that are player character options in Starfinder. We have been told that there is at least one ancestry and at least one versatile heritage. The ancestry is the peoples that lived on Eox before a magical weapon destroyed their atmosphere, which I think that's the Librians,
yeah,
right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We also know that the toolbox has a bunch of items, including Zoe paraphernalia. One of them is called the Bone Speaker Bobblehead. The art that goes with it is apparently just a little bobblehead of Zoe that Thirsty has lovingly named the Zobblehead.
That is good. That's good. And you can market that. That's
yeah, you can. Absolutely. You could like, it's kind of like how everybody was like, oh man, we need a plush of Jumanji, Lenny's panther animal companion or mm-hmm. big cat animal companion. Mm-hmm. And people just kept asking for it. And eventually it happened. You know, like a Zobblehead, you can market that and make a Zobblehead. Let people buy Zobbleheads or Zobbleheads. It's probably Zobblehead.
Yeah, Zobblehead sounds, it rolls off the tongue better though.
Yeah, it definitely does. So one of the parts that's apparently in this this section is in a fantasy world. You know, if you'd want to use divine magic, you typically use holy symbols and talismans. And so one of the questions is, what sort of things do we have around us in the modern world that act like holy symbols and and talismans? And if you want to invoke the personality of a person, why not a bobblehead? This item will be in the adventure and as part of a generic toolbox for adventures on the planet.
Okay.
Bobblehead. Apparently, Thirsty has been very excited to say that there is a Pathfinder Easter egg in Greyholds of the Grave World as well.
Oh, I wonder if that actually goes to pre-drift stuff, hopefully.
Could be. That'd be very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that that was announced at the very end of the stream is that April 21st will launch the Tech Class playtest featuring the Starfinder 2nd Edition Technomancer and the thing that I found, it said mechanist, but I thought it was the mechanic. I'm going to go with mechanic until proven wrong.
I'm going to say mechanist.
You're going to say mechanist?
Sure.
You think they changed the name of the class?
Why not?
Oh man. Oh man. It's fighting words.
It is different than the other word mechanic, right?
I do think that having a player class named the mechanic, which is just a regular person job, was always confusing.
Yep.
Because it makes you think that you can't be a mechanic without being a capital M mechanic.
Yep.
I think that when I hear mechanist, I think somebody who builds a giant robot.
Yeah, you think an artificer or something, right?
Yeah. So I'm hoping that it will be the mechanist. I think that if they change the mechanic class to the name to the mechanist, that's fine. I'm on board with that change because I think that the word mechanic was just too generic.
Yeah, I want to see how they do the robot companion, if that is an option that is available at first level, because how does it work in second edition with animal companions?
In second edition, how it works is you have like a base stat block, and the stat block has a special action that your animal companion can take, and it's usually a support ability that it does something that helps you. So like an example is that the bear gets a bear hug ability that it can use to restrain things, or the cat gets an ability to like pounce on things, and basically all of them have this. And then there is that's considered their juvenile stat block. So like you start as like a juvenile animal when you're low level, and as you level up, the animal either becomes, I think it becomes advanced, and then it becomes either agile or savage. You can pick which one you get. And as you get these improvements, the stat block adds additional things that are custom to that creature.
Okay.
So the creature's stat block will have the base stuff, and then it'll say like advanced improvement, savage improvement, that kind of thing.
Okay, but is it like just an extra character in the initiative, or?
Yeah, okay. So how it works is that they have it, it's not an extra character in initiative, but it is a separate character. Mm-hmm. And how it works in Pathfinder is that the companions typically don't do anything unless you use the handle an animal action, essentially. Mm-hmm. And when you do, you give up one action to do that, and then your companion gets two actions to use.
Okay.
So that's kind of how minions in general work in Pathfinder. So I would imagine something similar to that is probably how it will work. I'd be interested to see how similar it is to the Inventor's little gear buddy. I can't remember what automaton, I think is what they call them. The Inventor is like a Pathfinder, like clockwork gear, scrabbler machinist. Together guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, a machinist. Yeah. Although I think machinist sounds better for Starfinder than Pathfinder. So I'm glad they did Inventor instead.
Okay. So that's what I'll be interested to see how that handles that with.
Yeah. I think that one thing that I heard frequently when people were talking about the second edition playtest is that the Technomancer and the mechanic were missed. Like, I think that when you have core classes and you choose not to have them in your core game, that's something people are always going to be a little bit like salty about. Mm-hmm. And it was even true in Pathfinder 2nd Edition Remaster when they updated all the rule books in order to get rid of the Wizards of the Coast content that they could get sued over. They took the Advanced Player's Guide and the core rule book for 2nd Edition Pathfinder, and they took all those classes and they split them up between the two books based on how easy would it be for us to update them. And it just happened to be that like the sorcerer and the alchemist and the champion, which is their version of the paladin, needed significantly more work than, say, like the witch or the wizard or the cleric. And so all the classes that were relatively easy to update that didn't require major changes got put into the core rulebook. Mm-hmm. And all the classes that were going to need major updates, including several that were originally core classes and have been for almost two decades, got put in the advanced book. And so there was a lot of grumble about that, but I think it was the right choice overall to make sure that
it's just like base pragmatism, right?
Yeah. Best possible product that avoids.
Yeah. And it's just like being pragmatic about what you need to do.
Definitely.
I will say from my limited experience, I haven't missed the Technomancer.
Nah.
Because magic wasn't powerful in first edition, so like,
not, you know, I've
second is,
you know, I've played a Technomancer in second edition, in first edition Starfinder for one of my games that I played with Leo Glass, who used to be a Paizo editor, and I do kind of miss it because it was fun, but also at the same time, I'd rather them do it right because I felt like the Technomancer was just the wizard we had at home in first edition Starfinder.
Yeah, it and also the Witch Warper exists, and the Witch Warper I think is in a more unique place. And when you could just import classes from first edition or second edition Pathfinder, it wasn't really missing it. Mechanic was a bit more because that is the pet class, and a lot of people like that. But like not having a Technomancer, like as somebody who wasn't familiar with first edition, not seeing that was jarring. And also, all the Technomancers that I've ever used, we're just junk sword idiots. So
I'm sorry, I'm not sorry.
Yeah,
it's all my fault.
And lobby chat, as far as stronger, yes, because there's higher level spells and
much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like in first edition Starfinder, magic stops at level 6. You often had spells like redesigned and rescaled to fit that parameter, but for the most part, man, like magic was just never as good. It has this issue where Starfinder has the saving throw bonus progression of like Pathfinder second edition, but it doesn't have a degrees of success system that allow you to still do cool things when you fail. And eventually Starfinder figured that out. Like towards the end of the game, a lot of spells would be like, even if they pass, this thing happens, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like you still get an effect, but a lot of the early spells were just save or suck.
Yeah.
One of the reasons. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why the Technomancer kind of devolved into a junk sword build. Like, junk sword was an effective way to have a weapon that scaled that didn't cost against your money, and your enemies couldn't pass a saving throw and waste your spell slot with it. Like, I think that, like, when people talk about junk sword, like, oh, Technomancer shouldn't be this martial class wielding swords, it's like, well, that's kind of the fault of the design of spells in Starfinder.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was the most usable option.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. You just buffed yourself and then took your junk sword and you put it through somebody.
Yeah.
Very. I'm excited to see more from Guilt of the Graveborn. I think it's going to be pretty cool. It sounds like we're going to get treated to a suite of adventure content pretty quickly in Starfinder Second Edition. It's pretty cool.
Good. Give us options. Give us options to start off with, because I think one of the, like, things that puts you into a corner is when you come out with something new and there's one adventure.
Yeah.
If it's not something that immediately grabs people, you've already lost them.
And true.
You give people options, because if they like it, they'll come back around for the other one.
Yeah, exactly. I think especially this is true for adventure paths, where it doesn't happen quite as much anymore, because the classic adventure paths where we put out a new volume every single month, and that's still what Pathfinder Second Edition does. We'll see if Starfinder continues with model of what is it called? Mechageddon, where everything was published in one big book and released all at once.
Yeah, like compendium. Right?
Yeah, but I think that ultimately it kind of hits this situation where I'm just thinking back to first edition Starfinder, where it came out with like two society scenarios and volume one of Dead Sons, and then there was nothing new until like October when volume two of Dead Sons came out, and another one more society scenario came out.
Yep, because it was one society a month, if I remember right.
Yeah, they bumped up production real quick based on demand, but you know, you might argue that it was already too little too late by that point.
Yeah, I mean, it was in a tough spot because it's a new IP and it's sci-fi, and sci-fi is a little bit harder for a lot of people to get into, especially when there's not a tie-in video game or something else.
True. Now, that's basically the rundown of the big news thing. They spent an hour talking about this Guilt of the Graveborn, showing off art and whatnot. I think this is a good time to transition to, I want to hear about you GMing, because when we did our games all throughout last playtest season, I ran all the ones that we did and you played. Mm-hmm. So now I want to hear what it was like for you to GM. Tell us your experience.
Yeah, so I GM'd the Shards of the Glass Planet, the first playtest scenario, first level, nice and easy. I gave them the options of creating characters. I don't know the character creation rules, so I was going to go through it with them. They all elected to use a character. Somebody tried and then was like, I don't want to read that much. That's fine. That's totally fine. I gave them all the pre-gens. I let them, if they wanted to change out gear, if they were looking, that they could. I got a group of somebody who... All these people were familiar in different ways at role-playing games. I know one person has played exactly 5 games, one that has played 2 games, because I think I've run all of those games for those people over the last 15 years, whenever I've dipped them in. One was a new person that I met that's familiar with role-playing games, but not sci-fi. And then somebody else who is familiar with sci-fi and role-playing games, just hasn't played in a while. They had chosen... In speaking with all of them before, I made them talk to each other about who they're picking. 3 of them wanted to be Esef.
No, not creepy foot guy.
Yeah, just because it is easy.
That's fair.
And there's not a lot there. One person, they were like, it's either Esef or the Witch Warper character. And I was like, wow, that is bold.
Talk about range.
Yeah. So they ended up playing the Witch Warper character and had a good time with it. Some of the spell wording was a little bit weird. I did do a little extra legwork to like explain what the tags were for things. A lot of stuff is just common like starter GM stuff. The system itself, I did do some tweaking of it. Like I made them only get crit if their AC was beaten by 15. Because by 10 is just it can happen too often. They ended up getting very lucky on rolls and botting everything, so it didn't really come into play. when they're asking about those rules, I'm like, yeah, things could torpedo. You fought this one thing, and if this thing had rolled a 13 instead of an 8, that would have been a crit, and look, that damage would have actually knocked you unconscious. And they're like, oh wow, that is swingy. So
yeah,
they did have Chick-Chick-Sun, so they did have a healer. He didn't really get to do much healing, but he got to do cast gun and other spells. I also let them, if they wanted to, choose new spells, because...
But did he draw the pain glaive?
No, he didn't do any melee.
Oh my god.
Yeah, most of them are melee averse, except for the soldier? Yeah, the person... No, not even the person that played the soldier. Who was the last one? They didn't do a lot of melee. Basically, everything kind of exploded when they got near it. They rolled out of the park on that. Also, all the skill checks rolled out of the park on it. I wish there was a little bit more art in that book, but I understand why it's limited. You can only do so much. And to be fair, I think a lot of the things you're never going to see again, because it's a first level intro replayable scenario. So
yeah,
I did have to do a little bit of drawing to make sense of certain concepts, but it's a fun first level scenario. Doesn't dive too deep in any lore. And it does enough, I think, to get you into the groove of that there's more there. So we didn't get slowed down a whole ton because as I kind of told them, I'd rather just make a snap decision. We'll get back to the actual rules later. But there was nothing that was a real hindrance. Everything there made sense. And as much as I decry it, the Starfinder second edition system, which is based off the Pathfinder second edition system, is a perfectly serviceable system. It's not a bad system by any means.
Sure.
In fact, it is one of the ones I recommend to people when they talk about playing role-playing games. And they're like, I don't want to play D&D. It's like, Pathfinder 2nd Edition is the first one I linked them to because it is similar enough, it is simple enough, and it has a bit more crunch for when you get in there. I'm just a salty grognard because it's different from 1E.
Yeah, it's different from 1E.
Yeah, it's not me being a stupid multi-class, a barbarian, blood rager, oracle, so I can go rage prophet and rage with 9th level or 8th level spells in an anti-magic field. Like, it doesn't let you do that stuff, but maybe that's the point.
Yeah, I don't know. Your character also requires a surprisingly big brain to play in that game because you've got like 3 pools of rage.
I have 2 pools of rage. Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh, he only has 2 pools of rage. Everybody, hear that?
They're different. One's a blood rage. One's a standard rage.
I know. It's very funny. And
the,
I love it.
The blood rage can make people scared.
I know. The many people have feared the deep ocean because you've yelled at them.
Yeah. You give them the, what is that? Thalassophobia? Yeah. Thanatophobia is fear of death. Thalassophobia.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's very funny. Yeah. Well, it's so let me ask you, did any of those players like seem like they'd be interested in playing another game with those characters, or were they all like, this was fun, goodbye forever?
So we actually, I shanghaied them in as a set of two, because the next one I'm going to run is the second of the society scenarios at fifth level. So I'm going to give them the option to either build their own characters or level up the pre-gen from the first level, or just take the fifth level pre-gen. Once again, I'm doing this very free. We're just playing around in the rule system, getting a little muddy.
Yeah.
So the next one is It Came from the Vasp, which is a lot spooky of a scenario. I feel like there's one or two people, that's like half the group there, that would like a little bit more roleplay heavy scenarios, but it looks like those are probably for later on, because you're doing more mechanical based testing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Games.
Unfortunately, you don't need to play test role playing.
Yeah,
it works. People have done it for thousands of years.
Yeah. The bit that we got into, they were good at. That's where they really felt at home, coming from other systems. But I would like to see, because there are some abilities that are based around role play as well. So to see how those actually stack up would be nice. But I don't think we're going to get that out of this. So I'm just currently scheduling that game. So probably by the end of April, beginning of May, I should have that. That experience under my belt of a higher level where I actually have to remember what conditions do, because they probably won't just blow up everything in two rounds.
So let me ask you, GMing a game in second edition, what's the thing that you missed most from either first edition Pathfinder or first edition Starfinder?
What I missed most from those editions. I think it was the gear. There wasn't a lot of
gear. A hot take.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of gear in the scenario, and that it makes sense for the scope of the scenario, and the things that you fought. But there wasn't anything for the players to get from fights. Besides, yay, congratulations, you beat the thing and you've solved the puzzle with violence. There's
nothing, you did it.
Yeah, there's nothing that they really could pick up and go, oh, this is cool. This feels like an upgrade, or hey, I got something I can use. And yes, I could have added that, but I'm running the scenario. I'm doing enough already. So it was gear, but once again, it's probably a playtest thing. Hopefully later on you find more stuff that's more gear oriented. I could see it coming in this new scenario, there being an armory or repository of some sort, so that people can play around with stuff. Cause that's another part of it, is just like people like to feel like they're advancing, and, it's hard to do that within a scenario. And gear is the easiest way to kind of accomplish that.
Yeah, Lava Being in chat says that one thing they always want more of is consumables. So like those items that you can use, even if they're just minor little guys.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, coming from Pathfinder First Edition, Starfinder First Edition, what change in second edition do you think is the best change? Like, what was the thing that you were like, gosh darn, this makes things easier?
I don't know about easier, but I think margins of success is just a better way to play these games. I don't like the crit failure part of it. I don't know why you treat players and enemies the same, despite the fact that they're built different. And it's a system that is really built around having NPCs and PCs be different, but they're falling under the same rule, which I don't agree with, hence why I made that 15 to crit. But the degrees of success and that being baked into skill checks for the scenario really made people feel good when they did good.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that, where Starfinder is just kind of, yeah, you did it, yeah, you didn't. And then I'd have to ad lib that. The fact that that's built into a lot of the things, either spell related or scenario related, I think was the best kind of increase there. I had to remember what dice rolls they did, but you know.
Yeah. You know, if you want to tell James and I what your favorite thing about second edition or your favorite thing that you missed from first edition is, you should definitely join our Discord, where we have the Chillest Discord. You can find a link at nodirectionpodcast.com. There's a banner. You click the button. It brings you to our Discord, and you can literally message James and I whenever you want. Almost nobody does this. I literally say this every month, and nobody's like, oh, we're going to message James and Alex. Like, everyone's just like, no, we're going to sit quiet. We're going to be very calm. And no, do it. Do it. If you message us, we will answer. It might not be immediately, but you'd be surprised how quick it will be. Because that whole section is just getting very dusty, and it needs you, dear listener, to dust it off.
Yeah.
With your ats. At me, bro. Now, my thing that's going on is actually not related to Starfinder, but I'm very excited. I wrote as part of a Pathfinder Second Edition adventure anthology that is coming out. I think it's coming out next month, with the same month that Galaxy Guide is coming out. It's very exciting. It's called the anthology is called Claws of the Tyrant. And it's basically a set of three linked but adventures, but they are not the same adventure. Like, it's not like a path where the characters are expected to go from 1 to 2 to 3. They're linked by their main villain. And if you've played the Bloodlords adventure path, you might know of Saldig. He is a Grave Knight spy master in the employment of Geb, the undead nation, and we have a lot of fun with him in the Gravelands. My adventure is the first level adventure called Gravelands Survivors, where you are coming out of a bunker in the Gravelands several years after it got destroyed, the last wall was fell, and enjoy. You've got to survive. You've got to get out. Can you do it? I don't know. It's pretty tough. I'm very excited.
Yeah, that's cool news.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I like doing content. One of the things that's fun is I got a PDF and got to like look through, and sometimes like you write things and like you're in such a blur that you kind of forget what you wrote. So you pick it up and you go, wow. And then I like every now and then I'll look at the things and I'll go, oh, did they develop that? That's really good. The developer must have did a great job. Oh, I wrote that. That's in my turnover. I did that. And so I think that Graveland Survivors has some of my best prose ever. I have a section in this adventure where I kind of give you a rundown on like setting the stage, and it has a line in like the first couple paragraphs that I love. It's very good. When it comes out, I'll definitely talk about it more. But I definitely would appreciate anybody who wants to go and grab a copy and just say, yo, Alex, like I have your adventure. I'm gonna run players through it and see if I can knock them unconscious. It'll be very easy in Pathfinder Second Edition.
Yeah.
That's what that. Oh. Very easy. That timbre in James's voice is very good. So I guess what I would like to do going into next month, this looks like a really good time to remind people that what we had said earlier about the Technomancer and Mechanist playtest is going to be coming out in April. So it looks like, if we look at our charts, that would be coming out like the 21st, which is the second to last Monday in April. And our episode would be April 30th. So that'll give James and me a week to look at the playtest docket, which means we're going to have more content. I'm so excited. We're ready.
Yay, I would clap, but it would blow up the audio balance.
Right? just imagine just silent clapping. It's very good. Now, that's going to be our plan for that. And then May, we're looking at the Galaxy Guide will probably have been released by then. I believe May 7th is when that book comes out. So we'll have Galaxy Guide to review in May. And then I hope by June we'll be able to get an interview. I would love to have some Paizo people come in and help us hype up this game as we approach August 2025. Because that is when Starfinder Second Edition is unleashed. And I imagine that James and I will probably, because that book will come out at the start of the month, we'll probably do a big review episode that month. And we'll be drowning in content. It'll be content like we haven't had since, gosh, man, before Mechageddon. I feel like before Mechageddon. It's very exciting. Paizo, if you're listening, keep putting out those words. Just keep doing it. Put more. Sprinkle them. Give James and me more content, more reasons to get excited and share all of that with all of you wonderful listeners. Very excited.
Yeah.
Now, James, I've already had my shout out talking about Claws of the Tyrant. Do you have anything cool that you want to shout out?
No.
No, not even a single thing?
No.
No. Okay. Well, then normally we would like to go for an hour, but we're at the 50-minute mark, and James and I hit all of our potpourri. I did it. Potpourri, not potpourri. All of our potpourri targets for today. So Hopefully, I already did the plug for the Discord. Come in and join us. And I guess until next time, go beyond with no direction.